Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, October 19th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Economic Metric Up 45% in August, by Stuart Doreen. Midland's economy showed a heated side in August, according to the city's monthly sales tax report. The city reported collecting $5,666,162 this month, which was 45.83% higher than October 2021, and one of the largest monthly collections in Midland's history. Sales tax revenue is generated by sales tax income from 2 months prior to collection. October collection is based on August sales. And August sales continued a 12-month trend of year-over-year increases. The city has reported 12 straight months of growing sales tax collections compared to the same month during the previous year. And all but two of those months have shown a growth of at least 20%. Midland is coming off a fiscal year that was the second best in the city's history. October is the first month of the city's fiscal year. The Midland Development Corporation collected $1.416 million in October. This article is entitled, UTPB Gets Top Online Ranking. Campus is number one for best online RN to BSN program in Texas, by the Midland Reporter Telegram. The University of Texas Permian Basin has been named one of the best schools for online higher education in healthcare by edumed.org. In fact, UTPB's School of Nursing is ranked number one for best online RN to BSN programs in Texas. UT Permian Basin's online programs in the medical field earned top honors for their overall quality, affordability, and commitment to student success. Other rankings included Best Online RN to BSN Programs, 10th. Best Online Bachelor's Degrees in Psychology, 3rd. Best CACREP Accredited Online Counseling Master's Programs, 9th. UTPB offers an accelerated and affordable RN to BN online program to make that transition obtainable to an already busy working nurse, said Dr. Minerva Gonzalez, the Associate Dean of Academic Affairs and an Associate Professor of Nursing with the University of Texas Permian Basin's School of Nursing. Flexible online classes and accessible 8-week courses with multiple start dates enable a student to manage their schedule. And smaller class sizes provide supportive faculty interaction. Our rankings showcase the schools giving future nurses and allied health professionals the best chance to succeed from day one in the classroom to day one on the job, said Wes Harris, outreach coordinator for edumed.org. This starts with low-cost tuition, but also includes academic counseling, career placement, and other key resources that students need to graduate and get hired. EduMed.org's rankings come at a time when the demand for trained healthcare professionals is on the rise. According to Mercer, a global consulting leader in healthcare, the U.S. will see millions of vacancies in critical healthcare positions by 2025. One key to solving the healthcare shortage is making higher education more accessible, said Harris. Online programs open the door to students who may not be able to commit to a campus-based program while working or to commute to a classroom at all. EduMed.org researched and analyzed more than 7,700 accredited schools using data from the Integrated Post-Secondary Education Data System and from the schools themselves. The website's data science team then applied a proprietary algorithm to rank all qualifying schools for each healthcare discipline. This article is called Commentary. It is entitled, Hope House Isn't the Building, It's the People. It blinds fear of unknown through constant flow of unconditional love, respect. By Morgan Taylor Thomas, staff writer. As I'm sitting in the home office at the Hope House, across from Christy Gazelle, Associate Director for Gifts of Hope, Inc., the phone rings. Clint Dixon, Executive Director, answers. Gazelle and I continue quietly chatting until we hear, I'm so sorry. I'll be praying for your family. Your mom was a sweet, sweet lady. Silence violently fills the space, and tears flood both directors' eyes. I can't help but join them. A previous Hope House guest's long-distance caregiver, more importantly her daughter, just broke the heart-wrenching news. At this moment, I'm realizing Dixon and Gazelle, the only two Hope House employees, don't come to work every day because a contract or boss said so. They come because being compassionate, understanding, loving, and unapologetically sympathetic people lives deep in their cores. Having a background in social service, nursing, and fundraising, it's something I love to do, Gazelle confessed. What if it's my mother, my grandmother? It's really all about giving back the level of service I hope someone would do for my family member. I think we're meant to be in certain places, and this is one of them. Getting to hear stories from people share in their sadness and joys, it's rewarding beyond anything I can describe, Dixon said. Furthermore, the duo radiates comfort. As someone who's experienced the first-hand effects of cancer many times, discussing with others can feel daunting. However, both Gazelle and Dixon level with clients, never talking down or diminishing their process, and creating the perfect balance between being a strong and stable professional support system as well as a friend. One, the brick, and the other, the mortar. There would be no Hope House without Gazelle and Dixon. The overwhelming possibilities and positivity woven throughout the West Tennessee Avenue establishment does not come from the physical presence of the house, but from the two people who encompass the project's mission and purpose. Because of them, the community survives. What is Hope House? Part of Gifts of Hope, Inc., the Hope House stands as a place for patients enduring treatments at Texas Oncology across the street to find solace and peace. Serving 33 counties, people from all over enjoy the benevolent aura of the house. We really try and provide holistic support, Dixon explained. We give everything someone needs to get through their cancer fight, and then moving on to the next phases, regaining life, and moving through and working through that trauma. With some guests staying for weeks at a time, Gazelle and Dixon learn a lot about each client and their needs. A functioning ADA-compliant home, the Hope House is equipped with a kitchen, living area, workspace with a computer and printer, backyard, and more available to guests. Each patient receives their own bedroom loaded with the essentials, sheets and pillow, nightstand, bathroom, and television. If someone needs a full-time caregiver, no worries. Every room contains two twin beds. Other services provided by the Hope House and Gifts of Hope, Inc. include prescription assistance and durable medical equipment, dental, transportation, miscellaneous medical, meals, support groups, and networking. In addition, the Hope House remains a hive for the busy volunteers known as the Honeybees. Made up of former and current cancer patients, the Honeybees do everything from decorating the home and gifting current guests with knickknacks and handwritten letters to help prepare home-cooked meals and fundraising raffle bags. A vital part of the Hope House family, the Honeybees further solidify the familial atmosphere and admirable connections made in the home. Because the Hope House, as well as Gifts of Hope, Inc., serve all types of cancer, the crew loads the yearly calendar with a magnitude of events for community members to be involved in. Events such as Pink the Basin allow non-survivors to hear personal stories, while National Survivor Day allows those who have suffered to celebrate themselves and each other through a ribbon-hanging ceremony on the tree in front of the Hope House. In the end, no one understands the journey unless they've gone through it. The strongest link in the chain, the Hope House binds the fear of the unknown through a constant flow of unconditional love and respect. This article is entitled Paleontologist Details Dinosaur Research at WT Geological Foundation Event by Mella McEwen. Dinosaurs have long caught people's imaginations, whether the cuddly dino, pet of the Flintstone family, or the terrifying T-Rex and Velociraptors of the Jurassic Park movies. Dinosaurs are cool, explained Jack Horner, when asked why people are fascinated with the extinct animals. Horner is an award-winning paleontologist who retired from Montana State University, where he was a region's professor and curator of paleontology, and now works part-time at Chapman University in Orange, California, as a presidential scholar and lecturer. So cool are dinosaurs, in fact, that a group of students from Van Horn traveled to Midland to hear Horner address the West Texas Geological Foundation luncheon, which raises money to fund scholarships and educational programs for the region's science teachers. Horner does not hold any formal degrees, though he spent 7 years at the University of Montana, but has honorary degrees of science from the University of Montana and from Penn State. His lifelong interest in dinosaurs led to his involvement in paleontological discoveries that include the first evidence of parental care in dinosaurs, the first baby dinosaurs in nests, the first dinosaur embryos, and the first evidence dinosaurs returned to specific nesting areas over long periods of time. He was also involved in the largest discovery of bones, an estimated 115,000 individual animals at a mass death site attributed to a volcanic event. His first book, Digging for Dinosaurs, inspired Michael Crichton to write the novel Jurassic Park, modeling the lead character Alan Grant after Horner. Horner also served as a consultant on Steven Spielberg's movie version of the novel and subsequent movies. He described his main job as ensuring the dinosaurs looked accurate based on the evidence of the time, and that the actors pronounced words correctly. As to the accuracy of the science portrayed in the movie, I can tell you, telling Steven Spielberg something is wrong doesn't always work. While it may not involve extracting dinosaur DNA from a prehistoric mosquito trapped in amber, as portrayed in the movie, Horner is involved in efforts to develop a modern-day dinosaur using chicken eggs. His research has been referred to as developing dino chickens, or, as he prefers, Chickenosaurus. The work involves opening the chicken egg, grafting on tissue or turning on a gene, closing the egg back up, and let its development continue for several more stages. That work has been advanced by discoveries made by some of his graduate students, including one student studying dinosaur growth plates and finding cartilage, and another who couldn't extract DNA from a fossil, but discovered blood channels in a Tyrannosaurus rex. Testing fresher bones from what he called a B-rex, he said they discovered it was 16 years old. They could tell how fast it had grown, and that it would have grown much bigger than it was. They also found medullary tissue that allowed them to sex the dinosaur for the first time. While they have not been able to extract dinosaur DNA, they have extracted proteins. All of this information has informed their efforts to, as Horner put it, build a dinosaur. And in those efforts come the lesson he hoped to impart to the students hearing him speak. This information comes from doing things people think we shouldn't do, like crack open dinosaur eggs or cut the bones, he said. It's challenging preconceived ideas. In other words, crack an egg. This article is entitled "Man Gets 19 Years for Aggravated Robbery" by Mercedes Cordero. A 21-year-old Midland man was sentenced Monday to 19 years in prison after a Midland County jury found him guilty of aggravated robbery, according to a press release from the Midland County District Attorney's Office. A jury found Andres Schumann Jr. guilty Friday of the first-degree felony charge after an hour of deliberation. Evidence presented during the trial showed that on September 5, 2019, a 19-year-old victim met up with a Snapchat user by the name CTTG.TrapBoy, later identified as then 18-year-old Schumann, and an unidentified male at Kiwanis Park to sell them marijuana. The victim asked to see the money, and Schumann and the unidentified male asked to see the marijuana. When the victim refused, Schumann pulled out a gun and demanded that the victim give him the marijuana while the unidentified male attempted to remove the victim's backpack. During a scuffle, the victim was shot 2 times in the back before Schumann and the unidentified male fled the scene in an unknown vehicle. After a Midland Police Department subpoenaed the Snapchat records associated with the Snapchat username CTTG.TrapBoy, it was determined that the phone number associated with the account was also used by Schumann to report to Midland County pre-trial intervention at the time of the offense. Schumann was charged after the victim picked him out of a lineup, according to the press release. Following his arrest, Schumann lied about how long he had his phone number and claimed he was not involved in the shooting. At the trial, the victim again identified Schumann as the person who shot him. Schumann, who faced up to 5 to 99 years or life in prison and a $10,000 fine, will serve his term in the Institutional Division of the Texas Department of Criminal Justice, according to the press release. He will have to serve at least one half of his sentence before being eligible for parole. This article is entitled OPEC Plus: Growing Risk of Global Recession Justifies Oil Cuts, by Paul Burkhart, Anthony DiPaola, and Omar Tamo, Bloomberg. OPEC Plus defended its controversial oil production cuts, saying they were justified by the growing risk of a global recession. The cartel agreed on October 5th to reduce its collective crude output target by 2 million barrels, sparking condemnation from consumers, including the U.S., which accused it of aiding Russia's war in Ukraine. But the decision was motivated purely by supply and demand, and the drop in prices since the meeting shows it was the right one, said United Arab Emirates Oil Minister Suhail Al-Mazrui. Oil ministers from Congo and Equatorial Guinea reiterated this defense, while OPEC's top official said the group had little choice but to take preemptive action. The oil market faces very real potential for a global recession, which some may say has already started, OPEC Secretary General Haitham Al-Gaz said at Africa Energy Week in Cape Town on Tuesday. There was a consensus among the ministers regarding the need to act now and prevent a crisis later on. The agreement to curb production between the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its allies triggered a war of words between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia, the group's de facto leader. The White House accused the kingdom of coercing other countries into the supply cuts and taking Russia's side in its brutal war on Ukraine. The International Energy Agency said the cartel's decision could tip the world into recession. This article is entitled "Shale Mogul Rice, 41, to Reap $975 Million from BP Deal," by Gerson Freitas Jr., Bloomberg. A young U.S. natural gas mogul may be taking home nearly $1 billion after a deal with oil giant BP PLC. Daniel Rice stands to receive about $975 million in cash from the sale of Archaea Energy Inc., a renewable gas giant he helped create from a blank check company, according to Bloomberg calculations based on company filings. Rice, 41, is one of the self-described Shalenial brothers who took the reins of EQT Corporation, the largest driller of natural gas in the U.S., after a proxy fight in 2019. In 2020, he raised $237 million through the initial public offering of a special purpose acquisition company, which then acquired and combined producers of so-called renewable natural gas to form Archaea. Renewable gas, which can include things like landfill gas or biogas from animal waste, captures methane before it enters the atmosphere, as a far more powerful global warming agent than carbon dioxide. It's seen as a cleaner alternative to conventional gas, even as it still emits CO2 when burnt. BP agreed to pay $26 per share of Archaea as part of a $4.1 billion acquisition announced Monday. Rice, chairman of Archaea's board and architect of the transaction that created the company, has direct ownership of more than 37.5 million shares of the renewable natural gas producer, according to an April proxy statement. The company declined to comment on the calculation. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled, "White House to Tap Oil Reserve Again Amid High Fuel Prices," by Jennifer Jacobs, Ari Natter, and Jennifer A. DeLouis, Bloomberg. The Biden administration is moving toward a release of at least another 10 million to 15 million barrels of oil from the nation's emergency stockpile in a bid to balance markets and keep gasoline prices from climbing further, according to people familiar with the matter. The move would effectively represent the tail end of a program announced in the spring to release a total of 180 million barrels of crude from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. About 165 million barrels have been delivered or put under contract since the program was put into effect. The Biden administration also is set this week to provide details on plans to replenish the emergency stockpile. The Energy Department announced in May it was planning a new method of buybacks to allow for a, quote, competitive fixed-price bid process, unquote, with prices potentially locked in well before crude is delivered. President Joe Biden will speak about gasoline prices on Wednesday, White House Chief of Staff Ron Klain said in a tweet. The announcements will be part of Biden's response to the ongoing effects of Russian President Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine, a senior administration official said. The administration also seeks to address anxiety about stubbornly high gasoline prices ahead of midterm elections next month and historically constrained supplies. Heading into winter, the U.S. has the lowest seasonal inventories of diesel, according to data first compiled in 1982. Separately, the administration is still weighing limits on exports of fuel to keep more gasoline and diesel inside the U.S., according to two of the people who weren't authorized to speak publicly about internal deliberations. Although no timeline has been set for a decision on that potentially more dramatic step, it wouldn't happen before November's midterm elections, one of the people said. The export control idea, which would be temporary, has sparked division within the administration, as top Biden energy advisor Amos Hochstein argues in favor of new export controls, even as Deputy Energy Secretary David Turk has expressed concerns, said people familiar with the matter. Other White House officials, including Klain and National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, have yet to make a recommendation. Energy Department and White House officials have been quietly meeting this week with oil companies, including ExxonMobil Corporation and ConocoPhillips, to notify them of what to expect while continuing to encourage additional production of oil and refined fuels. Oil industry representatives and third-party energy analysts have cautioned that limiting fuel exports could lead to higher prices in parts of the U.S., particularly in the import-reliant Northeast. Spokespeople for the White House didn't immediately comment. The Energy Department referred to a previous comment from earlier this month that asserted the administration was going to look at all tools available to protect Americans and uphold commitments to allies. Republicans have made rising gasoline prices and inflation the centerpiece of their campaign to take control of Congress in the elections. The White House has been seeking to ease rising costs at the pump and bolster low domestic stockpiles of fuel, while also responding to the OPEC Plus coalition's decision earlier this month to slash production. Gasoline prices, one of the most visible signs of inflation, are a political headache for Biden, who in recent weeks has repeatedly warned oil companies against raising costs. Average U.S. gasoline prices were slightly lower at $3.87 a gallon on Monday, according to data from Auto Club AAA. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, October 19th. Death notices. Robert Edward Smith. Robert Edward Smith, 94, of Odessa, died October 16th in Odessa. Graveside service will be held on October 20th at 1 p.m. at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland.
This is Thoris, reading the Odessa American News for Wednesday, October the 19th. Man representing himself convicted of robbery. Jury sentences man to 15 years in prison. By Kim Smith, an Odessa man who told jurors his dead twin brother was responsible for robbing a smoke shop nearly 3 years ago, was convicted Tuesday of robbery by a jury that deliberated approximately an hour. Although Ector County District Representative Dusty Calavan asked the jury to sentence Frederick Calicut, 36, to life in prison, the jury opted to sentence him to 15 years in prison and assessed a $5,000 fine. The lowest sentence he could have received was 5 years. The jury deliberated 30 minutes during the punishment phase. In asking for the life sentence, Gallivan pointed to Calcutta's life of crime. He's got 9 felony robbery, and aggravated assault convictions, and at least 7 other similar charges were dismissed through the plea agreement process. He's a thief and he's a robber and apparently has been since he was 11 years old, Gallivan said. The prosecutor said he was afraid that if Calicut is set free earlier, he'll hurt his future victims so they won't be able to testify. I'm not going to take that risk, are you? Gallivan said. Calicut did not offer an argument during the punishment phase of the trial, although he did tell jurors he was not convicted in 2005 of the 5 counts of aggravated robbery Gallivan used to enhance the sentence he was facing from 2 to 20 years in prison to life or 5 to 99 years. Calicut said he only pleaded guilty to 1 count of aggravated robbery and 2 counts of aggravated assault. The jury decided Gallivan successfully proved his point, but still opted for the lower sentence. Gallivan told jurors during opening statements Monday he was going to put 5 witnesses on the stand to testify about the January 6, 2020 robbery of a smoker's oasis at Grandview Avenue and 26th Street. However, Gallivan ended up putting on several other witnesses who testified Calicut had also robbed them the same night after Calicut himself inadvertently revealed during the cross-examination of the lead Odessa Police Department detective he was a suspect in the robberies of a DK, Kent Quick, and Subway in the same neighborhood. The prosecutor also showed videos of all 4 robberies, and each alleged victim testified Calicut was the robber seen in the videos. On Tuesday, Calicut put 3 OPD detectives and officers back on the stand to reiterate the fact OPD did not have any fingerprints linking him to the robberies, and that they never found a gun, despite all of the victims stating they thought he had one near his waistband. Callicutt then took the stand himself. He told jurors his twin was responsible for all of the robberies, and it was his twin who was arrested just hours after the robberies were committed. His brother, Vincent James, would have testified on his behalf, but he died of an overdose on June 13, 2021, Callicutt said. During his testimony and during his closing argument, Callicutt told jurors he gave all three of the attorneys who have represented him the evidence needed to prove his brother committed the robberies, but he suggested at least two of those lawyers, Erik County District Court Judge Justin Lowe and Gallivan, concluded to ensure they never saw the evidence. He told jurors Lowe held him in contempt of court for refusing to stand down from him and for looking him in the eye. Up until that point, jurors had no knowledge of the fact because they were out of the room when that happened. Earlier Tuesday morning, Lowe berated Callicutt for making snide comments, suggesting he was impartial and glaring at him despite being warned he was about to be held in contempt of court and given more jail time. When Gallivan proved his extensive criminal history by using his fingerprints, Callicutt said Gallivan didn't show the jurors fingerprints taken at the jail because that would have proven the man arrested the night of the robberies was his brother. He don't want to present that because that's a lawsuit, Callicutt said. Once his mother died last month and could no longer testify about his twin, Callicutt said Gallivan suddenly pushed for the trial to move forward despite a nearly three-year delay. Callicutt said Gallivan was forced to take him to trial because he couldn't suffer the political fallout of dismissing the case. He thought he had a slam dunk, but when he realized it wasn't an alley-oop, he couldn't tuck tail and run, Callicutt said. Callicutt told jurors he was basically being forced to perform the equivalent of open-heart surgery to save his own life. He told the jury it could be them in his position or their brother or mother. During his closing argument, Callicutt said, "My past is dirty, but my future is spotless. But he don't want you to see that, though." He told jurors people can get Botox and breast implants to change their appearance, but they can't change their fingerprints. If he were guilty and so frightening, Callicutt asked the jury why it took so long to take him to trial. If they had a cockroach in their kitchen, they wouldn't allow it to reproduce over 3 years, he told the jury. "The main thing make me guilty is my past," Callicutt said. During his closing argument, Gallivan reminded jurors an investigator testified he ran Callicutt's alleged twin's name and date of birth through the National Crime Information Center database and did not get any hits even though Callicutt testified they both have extensive criminal histories. NCIC is a national database containing arrestees' criminal histories. "The only evidence you have that Mr. Callicutt has a twin is him saying so," Gallivan said, noting Callicutt could have presented witnesses verifying the twin's existence. Callicutt's wife attended the entire trial, and a brother and sister-in-law were present for a portion of Tuesday's testimony. Gallivan also pointed out Gallivan acknowledged from the stand that he bonded out of jail and was later arrested on failure to appear warrant in connection with the case. "Wouldn't it have been his brother who bonded out of jail?" Gallivan asked. Gallivan said his office files 5,000 cases a year and he doesn't have time to doctor evidence. The prosecutor reminded juries he told them from the beginning he didn't have fingerprint evidence or the gun. He also reminded them an expert witnesses said only 5% of cases result in prints good enough for comparison purposes. Gallivan pointed out, however, he did have plenty of videos showing Callicutt committing the robbery with what appeared to be a gun in his pocket or waistband. In order to convict Callicutt, Gallivan said the law says the jury has to find the victim of the smoker's oasis believed that they were in imminent danger of bodily injury or death. Whether he had a gun or not is irrelevant. It was her perception, Gallivan said. Calicut will have to serve at least 1/4 of his sentence before becoming eligible for parole. He'll also be eligible for good conduct credit. Gallivan said he fully intends to move forward with the cases involving the other three robberies Calicut is accused of committing. Odessa Athletics Hall of Fame. 1946 OHS football team has won for the ages. Editor's note. Enjoy this look back at one of this year's Odessa Athletics Hall of Fame honorees. This year's banquet is scheduled November 3rd at the Odessa Marriott. Other honorees include track star Curry Evans, OC rodeo great Jim Watkins, the 1989 Permian High School state and national champion Permian Panthers, and coach Gary Gaines, gridiron great Glenn Housel, and football star Lloyd Hill. This is by Royal McGregor. When nominations opened for the inaugural Odessa Athletic Hall of Fame in 2021, Brian Taylor submitted the 1946 Odessa High School football team to be inducted. Taylor's father, Glenn "Jug" Taylor, was co-captain of the 1946 Odessa High School football team with Harvey "Pug" Gabriel. That team completed a perfect 14-0 season and defeated San Antonio Jefferson 21-14 in Austin at Memorial Stadium in front of a crowd of more than 38,000 for the city's first ever state championship. The Broncos weren't selected in 2021, and it left Brian Taylor heartbroken. "I tried every way to get this team inducted last year," Taylor said. "They didn't make it." When the nominations for the 2022 Odessa Athletics Hall of Fame started, Taylor submitted the 1946 Odessa High School football team again. This time, Taylor received a phone call from CBS 7 News anchor Jay Hendricks, who will also serve as master of ceremonies for the Odessa Athletics Hall of Fame banquet, and he asked Taylor if he would give an induction speech for the 1946 Odessa High School football team. "When Jay called and said the 46 team was going to be inducted, I got emotional," Taylor said as he fought back tears. "They really deserve it." Over the years, the crowd that watched Odessa High win its first and only state football championship and the rosters for the Broncos and San Antonio Jefferson have gotten smaller. Taylor said during a phone call, "There are no surviving members from the state championship 1946 team." Taylor explained that College Football Hall of Famer Hayden Fry, who died in 2019, was the last surviving member of the 46 team. Fry coached the SMU and North Texas before his 20-year run at the University of Iowa, where he won multiple championships, Big Ten titles, and reached the Rose Bowl on 3 occasions. Fry saw 28 of his assistants become head coaches, including Bob Stoops, Bill Snyder, Bo Pelini, and Brett Bielema. "We should never forget that team," Taylor said. "There are very few people that remember these guys. I don't want Odessa to forget how great this team was and that they brought the first state championship title to Odessa." The Odessa American interviewed the 4 surviving members of the team, Fry, Charles Perry, Billy Mormon, and Harold Dozer, in 2016. An excerpt from that article exemplifies why Taylor wanted the 1946 Odessa High School football team inducted. The excerpt reads, "I just like the guys to be remembered," Perry said in his home in Odessa early this fall. That was in 2016. "For good reason. We had a great team," Fry said on the phone in 2016. "We were like a family together." In that article, Fry also said the 46 team was really special. "The people on the team and the coaches and the support we had from the teachers and the principal and the superintendent, they were all outstanding people. It was exceptional. I'm not bragging. Back in those days, in as small a town as Odessa was, to be the state champions in the state of Texas. Taylor explained to the Odessa American about the caliber of player the 1946 Odessa High School football team possessed. Taylor said 10 of the 11 starters from that team went on to play Division I college football and earned a degree. Jug Taylor joined Fry at Baylor, while Brian Townsend played for the Texas Longhorns. Townsend was drafted in the 9th round of the 1952 NFL draft by the Los Angeles Rams. Townsend was all Southwest Conference fullback in 1950 when he scored a school record 14 touchdowns. That record would later be broken by National Football League Hall of Famer Earl Campbell. Townsend was inducted in the University of Texas Hall of Honor in 1998. Townsend died in 2013. Jug Taylor and Gabriel both died in 2008. The Broncos were led by head coach Joe Coleman, who, according to a previous Odessa American article, that 1946 was his first year back on the OHS sideline since he left after the 1941 season to serve in the Navy during the war. Coleman's legacy lives on as Odessa's High's practice field is named after the state championship winning coach. Coleman died in 1979 at the age of 66. Brian Taylor said many didn't want Coleman to return as head coach, but all the players wanted him to be at the helm. Joe Coleman was a disciplinarian, Taylor said. They went to Lubbock for a couple weeks for a 2 days before the season started. They would get up in the morning and practice in full pads, and then they would have lunch, and then they would have a rest time, and then they would put the pads back on at 3 o'clock in the afternoon until 6 o'clock. Odessa High averaged 30.7 points per game and outscored its opponents 430-72, according to TexasBob.com. The Broncos collected shutouts against Lubbock, El Paso, Big Spring, San Angelo, La Mesa, Ysleta, and Wichita Falls. Brian Taylor said Odessa High limited All-American Kyle Rote to 17 rushing yards during the state championship game. Jug Taylor batted down Rote's final pass as time expired. Taylor said his father never had to brag about winning a state championship. Taylor played football for John Wilkins at Permian in the late 1970s. Taylor said his record while at Permian was 33-3. However, he never won a state championship. Despite never hoisting a state championship crown himself, Taylor said he will forever be proud that his father helped bring the first state football championship to Odessa. Everybody that walked through this town that played on that team was a celebrity, Taylor said. My dad was my hero. ECISD sees jump in kindergarten readiness by Ruth Campbell. 57% of children in Ector County ISD were ready to enter kindergarten this fall. That's 11 points higher than last year's score and 24 percentage points higher than the 33% score of 2 years ago. The announcement was made Tuesday by Lamar Early Education Center. Kindergarten readiness is one of ECISD's strategic priorities and a key measure of success for the community, too, officials said. A video of pre-K students announcing the results was played. Lamar, Carver Early Education Center, and a number of elementary campuses offer pre-kindergarten for four-year-olds. The Odessa Family YMCA offers pre-K for three-year-olds. Pre-kindergarten for four-year-olds is now a full day. Every child in our community today has an opportunity to have a three-year-old pre-K experience and a four-year-old pre-K experience to ensure that every child that enters kindergarten is equipped with the skills to be successful, Superintendent Scott Murray said. Murray said children who have gone through three-year-old pre-K started their first day of school ready to learn and ready to be successful in life. He expressed thanks to the Board of Trustees who made the decision to invest financially in pre-kindergarten, and also the teachers, principals, parents, and central office staff who made it possible. This work didn't happen accidentally. This 50-cent percentage is because of intentionality, Murray said. It's a team effort. It certainly took the village, and when the village comes together, good things happen for kids, he added. Associate Superintendent of Curriculum and Instruction Lilia Hanez said when she arrived at ECISD, the Education Partnership of the Permian Basin, the Early Childhood Action Network at the time, and First Five brought awareness to the district and the community about the importance of being ready and that those years, 0 to 5 years, are critical. Nanez said some of the indicators that a child is ready for kindergarten are that they can sing or say the alphabet, identify letters out of sequence, and know the difference between upper and lower letters. They learn and work on their fine motor skills. They learn how to use scissors and cut paper. They learn how to sort by color, shape, size, and they learned how to count to 10, and they can identify those numbers. But it also deals with that social well-being and that social intelligence. Being kindergarten ready means that you know how to pick up after yourself. It means you know how to go to the restroom and fasten your pants and wash your hands with soap, she added. It also means being able to grab a tissue paper and wipe your nose. And almost importantly about kindergarten readiness, children are now being prepared and so much more ready than they have been in the past. Lamar pre-kindergarten teacher Lena Hernandez said they were very thankful when pre-kindergarten went from half day to full day. She has taught pre-K for 13 years, and this is her sixth year at Lamar. We saw a huge improvement, Hernandez said. She added that the children knew their uppercase and lowercase letters. Instead of knowing that at the end of the year, they were doing that by Christmas, so that was a huge jump. And then we brought in our pre-K 3. So this is my first year having kids come to me that had already been in school, Hernandez said. She added that children already knew how to be in school. It helped the other kids that did not know what school was, so it was a great mirror for them. We just did our 9 weeks of testing. My class is amazing. My goodness, a majority, like 80%, is already where our kids normally would be in March, Hernandez said. She thanked the district for investing in pre-K. We get to up the rigor. We do hands-on, appropriate things around here, Hernandez said. She said they make sure the lessons are engaging, the students are involved, and they want to come to school. Academic-wise, it's been a huge jump, Hernandez added. Social, emotionally, is also another huge thing. Having the kiddos here all day long, they get to learn how to take turns, she said. Children also learn how to get their thoughts across to others if they want something, like a marker, for example. Jasmine Garcia has a 4-year-old daughter who will be 5 this weekend. She was lucky enough to be here last year in the pre-K 3 class. She did a half day there, and we saw a real improvement in her social skills. By the end of that, she could identify all of her ABCs and had social skills that she hasn't been able to learn much at home. She has an older sister with special needs who is nonverbal, so getting that interaction with teachers and with other students to help regulate behaviors, get some more one-on-one time, and actually focus on academics instead of just life skills was really great for us, Garcia said. I noticed when she went into a full day, she was ready. I think she was probably ready last year for full day. Now she can identify proper terminology of shapes. She knows all of her colors, her big letters, her little letters, and how to write them independently. And she's, I think, learning a lot more about appropriate behaviors with other kids, and how to ask and take turns, Garcia said. She added that her daughter will now be more than ready for kindergarten. I don't think that would have been possible without the past 2 years being here, so I'm very thankful for that, Garcia said. Muri said the pre-K improvement is how you change your community in a positive way. Our community's literacy rate is very low. These kids are entering kindergarten, 50% of them on grade level, if you will. They're ready to learn, and so as these kids move throughout the education system, they will maintain their grade level status, and so we'll see adults some days in years to come that are much more literate. They'll have the prerequisite skills to be more successful in our post-secondary experience. College, university, military, etc. So we start young and make sure that we develop those academic skills in kids so that they'll have opportunities for better jobs, better income, etc., Muri said. Kids today in ECISD are different. They have opportunities like they've never had before because of this investment, Muri said. Muri said he knows the kindergarten readiness rate will go up again next year. He recommends that parents who are thinking about sending their children to pre-K kindergarten ask questions, look at data, and talk to other parents. They can also visit a pre-kindergarten center by appointment and see what happens in a pre-K classroom. Our teachers and principals would love to talk to parents, Muri said. I think part of it, too, is pre-K is still new for many families, especially a family of a young child. You think about 5 and kindergarten, but you may not have even heard of pre-K at 3 or 4. So part of our work is to communicate with our community and make sure that they fully understand the opportunities that are available for children, Muri said. There are almost 2,000 children in kindergarten alone and 1,900 in 3- and 4-year-old pre-K. There's more room to expand and grow our pre-K program, Muri said. And now for some quick hits. Art Tales. The Ellen Noel Art Museum at 4919 East University Boulevard has scheduled an art event for preschoolers and their grown-ups for 2 p.m. today and on every other Wednesday. The event is free. Lady Chaparral Volleyball. Midland College will present the Lady Chaparrals versus Amarillo College Badgers at 6 p.m. today at the Al G. Langford Chaparral Center, 3600 North Garfield Street in Midland. Storytime. The Ector County Library, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled story time from 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. Wednesdays through October the 26th in the Children's Department. English classes. Second Baptist Odessa, 711 East 17th Street, has scheduled classes in English as a second language at 6:30 p.m. Wednesdays, classes are free and child care is available. Line dancing class. Mission Fitness, 8050 East Highway 191, has scheduled a line dancing class at 6:50 p.m. on Wednesdays. Registration is not required and admission is free. People of all skill levels are welcome. Midland College Art Exhibit. The Midland College McCormick Gallery, 3600 North Garfield Street, Midland, will present works by local artists during the fall 2022 Midland Arts Association Juried Expedition through November the 11th. Mission is free. Exhibition, reception, and workshop. The Ector County Library, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled an exhibition, A Permanent Record, featured works by Heidi Pytreat from November the 19th. Volunteer poll watchers needed. Commissioner Mike Gardner, Ector County Precinct 1, has announced the need for poll watcher volunteers. Training will take place at 2 p.m. Friday at the Ector County Republican Headquarters, 707 Jefferson Avenue. Training takes about 45 minutes. There is no interaction with the public. The objective is to observe the election process to ensure it is fair and honest. UT UTB named one of top schools for online health care. The University of Texas Permian Basin has been named one of the best schools for online higher education in healthcare by edumed.org. In fact, UTPB School of Nursing is ranked number one for best online RN to BSN programs in Texas. UT Permian Basin's online programs is in the medical field earn top honors for their overall quality, affordability, and commitment to student success. UT Permian Basin's online programs in the medical field earn top honors for their overall quality, affordability, and commitment to student success. The UT Permian Basin offers an accelerated and affordable RN to BN online program to make that transition obtainable to an already busy working nurse. Minerva Gonzalez, the Associate Dean of Academic Affairs and an Associate Professor of Nursing with the University of Texas Permian Basin School of Nursing, stated in the press release, "Flexible online classes and accessible 8-week courses with multiple start dates enable a student to manage their schedule, and smaller class sizes provide supportive faculty interaction. Our rankings showcase the schools giving future nurses and allied health professionals the best chance to succeed from day one in the classroom to day one on the job," Wes Harris, the outreach coordinator for edumed.org, stated in the press release. "This starts with low-cost tuition, but also includes academic counseling, career placement, and other key resources that students need to graduate and get hired." EDUMED.org's rankings come at a time when the demand for trained healthcare professionals is on the rise. According to Mercer, a global consulting leader in healthcare, the U.S. will see millions of vacancies in critical healthcare positions by 2025. Nurse practitioner, nursing assistant, and home health aide roles stand to experience some of the greatest shortages over the next 3 years and beyond.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.